Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
Guys, this is the third episode in our series, The Big Four How-To's. Last couple episodes, we talked about how to talk to sellers about creative financing, how to talk to agents about creative financing, and today we're going to be talking about how to write up the paperwork. This is something that everyone gets hung up on. If you're a newbie, you're like, well, how do I even do that? And this is something you shouldn't be afraid of, because, you know, if you get this wrong, you can always go back and rewrite it and say, I messed up, I made a mistake. But we wanted to talk about this on the podcast because, you know, people do ask all the time, well, how do you, you know, what does the paperwork look like, or how do you write this up? Right, Jeff?
I swear everyone is in a serious panic when they feel like they have a deal and they have no idea how to write it up. And they think you've got to have special paperwork. They think that you're going to be writing up the note and deed of trust. And that is not the case. I hope this episode will simplify things for people quite a bit.
Yeah, and we should be able to keep this one short and sweet. Because, you know, it's this paperwork is, you know, pretty straightforward. Okay. So I know, Jeff, you got a kind of a three-pager contract that you use. It's just a basic real estate purchase agreement. I have like a two-pager that I use, and then, you know, I'll sometimes use the state REPSI, just kind of depending on my seller and who I'm dealing with. But really, guys, it's straightforward. You know, seller's name, buyer's name, the date, and then, I mean, yours has a lot more detail in it, but, you know, purchase price. And then if you're doing terms, I think you note that on yours, right, Jeff?
Yeah, so I have, so first of all, let's talk about if you're licensed. If you're licensed, most likely you're using your state REPSI, right?
Very good point.
There are specific rules. Probably every state varies a little bit, but most likely you are just using the state REPSI, and which probably means your contract is 6 pages, 7, 8 pages long. It may or may not be assignable. You may need a seller financing addendum. There's going to be a lot more to it, but you probably had some training on it. So this episode is more geared toward the people that are not licensed and need to understand how to fill out a contract. So yes, my contract is basically 2 pages and a paragraph long. I've used the same contract for 21 years. I've added a couple of things. I've taken out a couple of things over the years. It's pretty straightforward, but it's not like, you know, I saw a contract the other day. I'm like, wow. It was 1 page long, and I mean, it had the bare minimum. Okay, that is not what you want to be using in this case. You don't need to cover everything with 6 to 8 pages like the state REPSI, but yeah, you got to have a little more than the purchase price and the address. In my REPSI, we have 2 sections, one where it spells out what the earnest money is going to be, what the purchase price, what the down payment, the amount subject to that you would take over. To that effect, you just fill that out numbers-wise, very simple. And then in section 2, it says if there is creative financing, you would now fill out this section. They'll be like, hey, how are you taking this? Was it contract for deed or all-inclusive trust deed and note, wraparound mortgage, you know, well, whatever it may be. An interest rate, if, you know, we just did one where there is no interest rate, so zero. You know, for how long, months or years. And then what we always put every single time, see, addendum, okay? So I don't almost care, as long as your REPSI, your purchase agreement, has been looked over by an attorney and felt like, hey, it's got the necessary components in it, even if it is not what I would like to see. What I would do, and this is the part that I think makes it so much simpler, is I would always say, see addendum one, okay? And Jonathan, you've seen my addendums, right? I mean, I create them. There's nothing special. I'm looking at one right now, and here's what it is. I write addendum one, okay? And then I just list all the things that I want as part of the contract. So let me just run through this, and these are just some of the things, and for whatever reason, and I'm trying to think of what are any of the potential details or issues I need to cover, and I want to simplify, okay? So some of these are in every single addendum, some are in based on what the offer is. So first is subject to inspection of the property, because almost for sure we have made this offer without seeing the property. Closing to occur at, and I'm going to choose my title company, or it's going to say closing to occur at buyer's choice of title companies. The only time that won't say that is if seller has already opened escrow somewhere. Closing to occur between, here I had a number of days. What I'm running up against right now is title companies are taking much longer to pull title. So I might say closing to occur by June 1st, unless closing is delayed because of title. Agreement automatically extended until we can pull title report, something to that effect. Due diligence deadline to last 21 days from signed agreement, or 25 or 23 or 14, whatever it is that you want to put in, I want that in my addendum. Seller to give reasonable access to the property during the due diligence period. If I may feel like I need 2, 3, 4 different showings, I might put that in there. I'm setting my expectation with my seller. Closing to occur once tenant has moved out of the property, or closing to, you know, how are we dealing with a tenant? How are we dealing with an owner occupant in the property? I want to address that in the addendum. This one had a substitution of collateral. Seller agrees to allow buyer to substitute the collateral with another piece of property of equal to greater investment to value for up to the term of the note. And then anytime that I'm offering creative finance, this is what I have. Seller is agreeing to sell the property on a contract for deed, all-inclusive, wraparound mortgage, land contract, whatever it may be, with the following terms. Okay, and then basically I just pulled this out of my LOI, purchase price, down payment, monthly payment, principal and interest. This does not include taxes, which the buyer will pay. Term, 48 months, balloon payment at the end of the term for remaining balance. Buyer will be responsible for all maintenance and repairs. Buyer will be responsible for all expenses, including HOA, taxes, insurance, utilities. Deed will be held in escrow and only be transferred to buyer once the entire purchase price is paid in full. That's obviously a contract for deed or land contract. payments to begin 30 days after closing on the first of the month. Most of them say 60 days now. Okay, and then there's a place for the seller to sign and date, and a place for the buyer to sign and date. Okay, I've created this addendum. Yeah. And we have different templates for different types of properties. We may have one for a rental property where we'll have a couple of things in here that'll say about prorating the rents at time of closing, crediting the buyer with the deposits. There may be something about that seller agrees not to sign any additional leases during the due diligence and time of closing. On an owner-occupant, it may say seller may have the right to stay in the property for 2 weeks after time of closing. $8,000 may be held out of closing proceeds until seller has moved out of the, has vacated the premises and has left the property in reasonably clean condition. If seller does not vacate the premises by this date, seller will start incurring a $100, $200 a day fee out of the escrowed money. And at this date, all money is forfeited and seller will now be considered a tenant in default. Something to that, right? So I want to cover, you know, if I'm asking for some stuff in the house, I'm going to include it. All furniture, including blah, 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 come with the sale of the property. So any of the details I want in the addendum. So even more important than the purchase agreement is the addendum, in my opinion. And I want to simplify my addendum so that any title agent or attorney can just go to my addendum and see all the simplified terms of this agreement, rather than having to read through, you know, the purchase agreement and pull all the information out of it. Doing the paperwork is super easy. First and foremost, get a good, you know, short but contract that will cover you. And whatever weaknesses that contract has, make up for it by creating an addendum.
Yeah. And one thing I did when I first started is I asked, you know, another investor for his REPC, and then I made that into a Word document, right? So I can edit it and change it as I see fit. And I've edited and changed my own REPC over the years as well. So I would advise you guys, if you don't have a purchase agreement, go to your local RIA and hook up with someone that does. Or, I mean, there's so many you can get offline, right? But the key point there is to make sure that you have an attorney review it, just to make sure that you're covering all your bases and you're not exposed to any lawsuits, I guess, by not disclosing something. So
can we talk about just a couple of things that you should kind of look at having in your agreement if you have one, like you do, Jonathan, where you can edit it?
Yep.
So if you're a wholesaler, you should have that it is assignable.
Yeah.
Even though contracts are assignable, unless they have in it that it is non-assignable, I would tell you I'd much rather have in it that it is assignable.
Yeah.
A lot less confusion going forward. I added some terminology a few years ago. I am a wholesaler, so and every once in a while I run into this issue that my seller has agreed to sign another contract with another buyer. And so I have a line, it's the last line in the purchase agreement, that says I have the right to place a notice of interest on this property up until the time of closing at my own expense, how I see fit. If I don't end up buying the property, it is my responsibility to pay to have it released from that property. But that I basically, once they sign, I have the seller's permission to do this. You need that. And as every state that I'm aware of, you cannot place a notice of interest without having basically the permission of the seller to do so.
Yeah.
I can tell you this has come up maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 times max in the last 7 years. Almost never. And I just basically say, look, I've been burned in the past. I'm sure you're not one of those people, but I was pretty sure that those people that I dealt with weren't those people either. So this is just to protect me. And as long as we're both upfront with one another, it won't affect you in any way.
Yeah. And my own purchase agreement has a seller agrees and authorizes buyer to place notice of interest on property. And I've never had anyone question me on that. And if they did, I would just say, yeah, we're just stating on title that, you know, you're going to be selling the property.
Yeah. Well, we have a
contract. I would leave it at that.
Yep. That's really all it is. It says we have a contract and as long as no one tries to do anything funny, there's no issues. I would say those are things always important. And like I said, I like to use, and I'll tell you, title companies and attorneys have told us this, that they appreciate how we structure our addendum so that it simplifies the process, so they understand exactly how things need to be written up. Now, in our purchase agreement, you could go to section number 2 and it'll say, you know, hey, 3% interest at a payment of $14.53.27 for 36 months. The privilege of prepayment does apply. Due on sale clause does apply. And if you don't have that stuff in your agreement, then you should address it in your addendum. So, hey, if you want the option, or you think that your buyer would want the option of being able to prepay, so, you know, if you've got a 5-year term on your owner finance, that they can go sell it, refi it, pay it off at any point in time during that 5 years. You don't want to prepay. So you can just put that right in the addendum. There is no prepayment penalty. If you don't want, let's say you're wholesaling this deal and you don't want the new buyer to create a new note to a new buyer, and you know, you've got a second wrap in place, and even though you're not involved anymore, or maybe you are, it doesn't really matter. You don't, that's not what you agreed to with the seller. So you would say, hey, maybe there is a one-time transfer where the due on sale clause does not come into play. But anything after that due on sale is in play. So what that means is that, hey, if the buyer transfers to another buyer without your knowledge or permission, that you can actually call the loan due, just like the banks. Wow, that's pretty cool. But if you don't put that in there, and it becomes like a little... Now, when your documents get drawn up, you may not have it in your documents, or at the very least, it becomes a gray area. And you know where gray areas end up, don't you, Jonathan?
Yeah, right, in court.
That's correct. So if you can avoid that, I would certainly say to do so.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Jeff. What's your thoughts and feelings on if a seller cancels on you? And then, you know, they go with another buyer, not that they signed another contract while they were under with you, but they they canceled, say, I'm no longer selling this. And then,
what's their reason?
They found someone that would give them a higher price.
Oh no, I'm not.
Do you record a notice of interest if they back out on the sale?
Yes. The way I look at this is, if I know 100% I can move this property, then I'm going to have a conversation with the seller. Like, look, you already agreed with me. It's kind of illegal to cancel a contract so you can sign a higher contract. I don't want to do this, but I will. I'm going to place a notice of interest on your property. It's going to cloud the title. It's going to, whoever you try to sell this property to is, they're going to have to come back to me to get it cleared. And to be honest, I'm not going to clear it. We shook hands, so to speak, where we trusted one another. And now you're telling me that, I shouldn't have done that with you. So that's what I'm going to do. If I don't think I have a buyer, then no, I'm just going to be like, I'll release it. I will walk away. If they had a real issue, like, there was a death in the family or something's changed or whatever, I may say, I'll just walk away and, we'll see what happens. Or I may say, look, I'm happy to let you out of this contract, but when you do sell, I want the first opportunity to buy, and I'm going to leave this notice of interest on your property. And if we work something out at that point, then I will remove it.
Yeah. Cause I know, another wholesaler where they had a seller agree with them, sign a contract with them, cancel that contract. And then, they found out later that they sold the property, to someone else for a higher price, and they recorded a notice of interest on the property. However, when that sale went through, the title company missed it.
Yeah.
And then when that other, when the new owner went to try to sell it again, that's when that title issue popped up, that, there was a notice of interest recorded. So technically, because the title company missed that, it was on them. And so the title company had to go negotiate with that wholesaler for his fee to get that release.
Did he settle?
I never followed up with him on that. I think he did, though. I think they offered him like some chump change for it. They're like, we'll give you $1,000 or something. He was going to wholesale it for like 40K.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go away for $1,000 then.
No.
Now they screwed up.
Yeah. They transferred title with that there, on warranty deed. So they're, they're held liable.
Yeah, it's a problem. So,
anyway, I just wanted to get your feelings on that, because I know, some guys get screwed on that, especially if you have a buyer lined up, and this guy had a buyer lined up for, for $40,000.
We just had this issue in Kentucky, where we found the buyer, and we needed the buyer. The buyer posed as a real buyer, really was a brand new beginning wholesaler, and went to the, he asked us specifically, do we have it under contract? Yes. Are you wholesaling it? Yes. So he went to the property and basically asked the seller if he would sign a new contract. The seller was interesting. The seller actually agreed to sign another contract for less money, but a quicker closing. Yet the seller's the one that called us after and told us that the buyer had offered a contract. He did not tell us that he signed it at that point. So I had to deal with both buyer and seller. Let's say that didn't end very nicely for either of those two.
That's something you recorded a notice of interest on?
I was ready to go record a notice of interest. The problem that I had was that I still wasn't sure if I could move this house. This was the first person that was to go over and see it. I never got his feedback, but I did see his new advertisement on wholesaling houses full time, and I actually posed as a buyer and called him and said, I want to buy this property. And we had this whole long conversation, and I said, I think you've got bigger issues than me sending you, wiring you earnest money on a Saturday directly. And he's like, well, what bigger issues? I'm like, why are you trying to sell me a property I already have under contract? And I told him, I'm going to give you one opportunity to do the right thing here. And he did not have some kind words for me. So I made it clear online what he had done. I shared it all around. It probably got to thousands of people. It was his, he had not completed his first deal. And yes, I did. I threatened to record a notice of interest. Even the seller was ridiculous. He said that I forged his like wife's name that we had signed electronically. So I don't know why the seller turned on us. This buyer convinced the seller that he was actually the buyer. I sent the seller the advertisement showing him he was trying to wholesale it. But at the end of the day, going to the Division of Real Estate and getting that notice of interest recorded, I better know that I'm going to follow through, right? And I just did not know if we were going to be able to or not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. That's unfortunate, really. Did that other buyer just offer him more money? Is that why you wanted to go with them?
Less money.
How does that work?
He was going to close sooner, supposedly. He offered a sooner closing. But yeah, he didn't realize that this guy was going to try to wholesale it too. So, shady. There's some shady people in this business, no doubt.
Which is why it's good to have a great Repsy and addendums.
That's right.
That you have sellers sign.
Yep. So
that protects
your I pointed this out directly to the seller that I said, go read your Repsy line number 21 or 22 about how I can place a notice of interest. He said, tomorrow I'm going to remove myself from title and now you will have nothing. All contracts will be void. And I said, yeah, that's not quite how it works, man. You're digging a bigger hole for yourself here.
He's going to remove himself from title. Who gets title then?
No, who did the
even heard woman, of that?
I don't know if it was his girlfriend or wife or what, but who also signed. So I don't know what he's thinking he was going to do, but I told him, I hope you're planning on keeping this house long term, because if I file this notice of interest, the only person you're ever selling it to is me.
Yep.
I never did it.
Yeah.
But I did do it a few years ago in Washington, and we saved ourselves like a $45,000 deal because of it. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So that seller canceled on you?
Our buyer tried to go around us to the seller. Offered them more. The buyer said, hey, we're not selling to you anymore. Wouldn't contact me. And it was funny. He sent me a text saying, if you have any more to do with this, contact my attorney. So he sent me his attorney's phone number. And I did. I called his attorney. And it happened to be the closing agent. And I said, great, I'll be filing a notice of interest. And he's like, well, in the state of Washington, if we catch it, we catch it. If we don't, we don't. And I'm like, you're an attorney. Do you even hear yourself with what you're saying? So I'm making you aware it's there. And if you decide not to catch it, it's your neglect. And, we're going to end up in court. He's like, well, I'm not going to close this. And I'm like, good. Tell your client. And I sent him a text and I said, here's the deal. I filed this. You're never closing with anyone other than me. I hope that you don't mind owning this for the next 30, 40 years. And his wife then responded, text, said, I have to apologize for my husband. Yep. I don't know what came over him. And it's like, okay.
So they end up selling that to you guys then?
Correct. Yep.
That's some shady attorney right there.
If we catch him,
if we don't, we don't.
Yeah, but I would make sure you catch it then.
Man. Yeah, you're like, this conversation here is proof that you know.
I'm like, oh, what kind of title company says, if we catch it, we catch it. I'm like, yeah, that would instill confidence in me that when you give me a title search and insure it. We breezed through it and we didn't see anything. So.
I know, right? Oh, we overlooked that one. That's your fault. All right, guys. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. The biggest thing here is, don't get caught up on this step. Paperwork is simple. Ask another local investor for their rep C if you don't have one, or get on BiggerPockets and, ask for, someone in the community that is a fellow investor in your area if they have a rep C that you can use. But most importantly, have an attorney look it over to cover your ass, really. In case there's any potential legal issues that arise. And if you're in this business long enough, something will come up for sure. Just ask Jeff.
You do this long enough and you see all kinds of stuff. So.
Guys, if you like this content, please rate and review our show on your podcast. Get out your phones right now and do that just to help us out to keep this thing going. You can find all of our episodes at thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. That's our archive. If you want special access to a step-by-step video on how to create terms on a single family home and how to sell that and reap a profit from it, Jeff made one. Just text CFP or Creative Financing to 877-409-8090, and that'll give you a little taste of the Creative Financing Academy that we're putting together. Also, if you want to be a part of Jeff's apprenticeship program, where he is virtually wholesaling all across the nation, it's wholesaling specific with a creative financing component to it because they make creative financing offers. Please email Rebecca, that's R-E-B-E-C-C-A at weofferoptions.com. Did I miss anything, Jeff?
Jonathan, I don't know if you even realize this, but I believe today is our 3-year anniversary doing this podcast. It's pretty close if it's not the actual day.
Wow. I did not
really
realize
close. That. So 3 years, unbelievable. When you approached me about doing this, I thought we would, make it 6 months or so. And it's been 3 years. We've done, I don't know how many episodes, 160 more.
Yep.
So unbelievable. I want to thank you for pushing me to do this and, hanging with me for the last 3 years. So
thank you, Jeff, for keeping me going too. Cause sometimes I'm like, why are we still doing this?
I think we had ideas of trying to, get sponsors and do all kinds of stuff. And
initially,
just so everyone understands this, we are not making one penny from this podcast right now. So, to help us grow it is in, if you like what we're giving you, the free content of what we're giving you, rate, review, and share. Join our Facebook group because that's all we're getting out of it right now.
And it actually costs us money to do this. Money comes out of our pocket to do this. There's hosting fees for our site. These recordings have to go to a cloud where we have hosting fees there. So, there's fees that are involved and, you know, buying the domain names and, you know,
well, we really need to start monetizing this.
Yes. Yeah. So guys, definitely pass it along, pass the word along that this is the best podcast for creative financing in the real estate investing space.
Yeah. And if you're worried about purchase and sale agreements, if you join the apprentice program, you get mine, all my addendums, LOIs, all the paperwork. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, guys, till next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.